it's very hard because there were a lot of people and people were screaming and, you know, that it couldn't happen at the Imperial.
There is no fading of memory for the people in Brownsville, Texas, about the murders that took place on March 11th, 2003.
There's a lot of people, they go in that building and they don't respect it. I think it's time to the mayor to do something.
The murders of three little children. That report from CBS Channel 4 News in the Rio Grande Valley. Children killed by their parents who were, some people in town claimed, born of an evil folks in Brownsville still believe haunts the town, and especially the apartment building where the crimes were committed.
Brownsville is one of the poorest cities in the United States and has ranked several times as the poorest metro area in the United States. And I think in part because of that and because of its location on the U.S.-Mexico border, there's a sense that it's its own place, that it's not quite the United States and it's not quite Mexico. It's something else.
Laura Tillman found the ghosts of this crime as a reporter in Brownsville long after the murders. She says the way they affected this community's sense of itself says a lot about the places and communities left behind in America.
I came across the story of this two-story apartment building in downtown Brownsville that the city was debating whether or not should be demolished. It was the site of a horrible murder several years before in which a couple killed their three kids. And I realized when I started reporting on this story that there was so much more that people had to say, that it really hit on a lot of the issues that were going on in the city that were most important to people, issues like poverty and drug abuse and religion. You know, every time I would go to the building, people would approach me, they would talk to me, they would tell me their opinions.
Of the crime.
Of the crime, of why it happened, of what should be done with the building. And I just realized that if I really wanted to understand this new place, this was a story that would allow me to have those kinds of deep, revealing conversations with people about their beliefs and their hopes and their dreams and their fears that nothing else I'd reported on would give me access to.
And in some ways, the defendant in this case, the convicted father, is among the most famous people in Brownsville right now.
Right. He's, if you mention his name, John Alan Rubio, everyone knows the case immediately. Everyone seems to have some connection, even if it's very peripheral, to this family or to the building. And he was born and raised in Brownsville. I think there's a sense that he's of the city, even though he's become kind of a communal enemy there.
What was it about his family that was like Brownsville? What of his family was like nothing
right.
else that you saw?
He was raised in a family that struggled with, unfortunately, certain issues that a lot of people struggle with in Brownsville. His mother was a drug addict. His father was physically abusive. He struggled in school, and he didn't really have the support at home to try to get him the help that he needed to be more successful. When you look at IQ tests that were conducted when he was in school, he was on the low to average scale of IQ. By the time he was convicted of this crime, his IQ had dropped by about 20 points due to the amount of drugs that he was doing. I think that when people look at that family, they have a lot of sympathy for the things that that family was going through because they were just another family that people were friends with, people saw at the local soup kitchen that didn't seem particularly different in the sense that they were facing different risks that other families were facing. And I think that maybe is why this crime in the end hit people so hard, because when you look at the conditions that that family was under, you realize there are so many other people in Brownsville who are still living like that.
You wouldn't have known about this crime if you hadn't come upon the debate over the demolition. Is that the case?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I had heard about this crime, but I never was interested in crime reporting particularly, and I definitely would not have written about this case if it weren't for the building.
What do you think the debate over the building signifies, and what was the building's fate?
The building in question where this crime occurred is a two-story apartment building in downtown Brownsville. Brownsville has an extraordinarily high number of historical buildings for Texas. It's the second highest number, I believe, in the state after San Antonio. And actually, many of those buildings have been demolished over the years to make way for other construction. And so when this issue came to the Brownsville Heritage Council of whether or not the city could use public funds to demolish this building, and this was way back in 2008 when I first reported on this case, there was just one member of the Heritage Council, a man named Mark Clark, who voted against the demolition. And when I interviewed him, he asked, "Is there any such thing as an evil building?" I wasn't sure what that question meant exactly. And when I asked different people, there seemed to be like sharply divided opinions between whether the building itself was somehow haunted or evil or should be destroyed as a result of this case, or whether the building was simply a structure made of bricks and concrete and had no role in the crime. It was just a building.
What do you believe?
I think that ultimately, the memory of this crime is contained inside of this building, and that it's a memory that is dredged up over and over again every time people see the building, every time people even drive through the neighborhood, because it's in a central location in the city. And because of that, I think that it has incredible power. Thinking about crimes like this in terms of words like evil or calling John a monster is damaging to our ability to deal with those crimes in a constructive way and deal with problems in the community that combined to allow something like this to happen. These structures where tragedies occur raise very complicated questions for communities. In the case of Brownsville, this conversation went on for a long time because of the building's historical status, because in order to use funding to tear it down, there had to be this debate. And in the meantime, there was a small group of people in Brownsville who started imagining, what could we do with this building that might actually speak to the causes of the crime? Could we make it into a social services agency? Could we make it into headquarters for the Wellness Coalition? And so in the end, there was a garden built behind the building called the Tres Angeles Community Garden in honor of the children. Sadly, when I went to Brownsville to see the demolition of the building, which finally occurred on Monday, the garden was actually torn out of the property because in order to demolish the building, they had to make space. But the building is now gone.
Laura Telman is a journalist and author of The Long Shadow of Small Ghosts, Murder and Memory in an American City. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.